When I pull out the pen, I'm a wolf out again. Time to suck up the lung, the school's out again. The flow's distinguished, a rap genius makes it look like I don't speak English. Plus I space out the words like Silver Surfer to prove that I got the skill to murder, kill a verse or sell out arenas like I'm backstabbing Gilbert. Nerds and beats like Buffalo Bill, he puts the lotion on the track. Seven continents and notions on his back, I attack the block as if I'm...
Hello and welcome to the I Want More Comics podcast, episode number 49. I'm Richie.
I'm Sean.
I'm Zach.
And here we are, number 49.
I know, we're getting
right
close.
Right before the big 5-0.
We're getting old.
It's super getting old.
This is like old hat now.
Yeah,
I think crazy. We've done this a few times.
Yeah, speaking of doing things over and over again, how about the news?
Alright, so just really quickly in the news, you know, some comic book stories and, of course, what's going on with us here at the shop. Recently, Marvel just announced that Jason Aaron is going to be the writer of the Marvel Legacy book. This is going to be the one shot that's supposed to tie the universe together during the Generations event that they're doing with the different characters teaming up with their partners, you know.
Right.
But they announced that Jason Aaron's going to do it, so a lot of people, including myself, got excited because Jason Aaron's a fantastic writer. So yes. I think that's going to be really cool to see him take that on.
I agree with you. I think I'm excited for anything Marvel that kind of pushes us to that next era of writing. I have high hopes.
Absolutely.
Wait, what are we talking about? Well, I'm just kidding.
Comic books and comic book accessories.
I got jokes.
Then also was recently announced Marvel is going to start off with a set of 5 different variant covers that are going to be rock theme covers, kind of like what they've been doing with the hip hop covers.
Right.
But this is going to be rock albums.
Yeah, I looked at them. I could already name them all.
Go for it.
Well, no, I mean, if I've seen
it.
If you saw them. Yeah, one of them's going to be Rocker Raccoon.
One of them's a little ambiguous because one of them could either be The Clash or be Elvis Presley. So I don't know which one they're going for.
Well, that's The Clash.
Maybe. Third one? It's the same. Elvis Presley's first album cover, The Clash aped that one.
Okay,
well, so it could be either
one. So it's an ape of an ape and an ape?
Yes.
It's
4 apes, yo.
There's
only 3 apes.
Yep, and then there's a Rock Nirvana. Raccoon in Nirvana's.
Yeah, he should have been naked in that.
It would have been funny.
Maybe he was.
It's awesome.
Maybe he was.
This upcoming week, once you hear this, it's going to be the weekend of Denver Comic Con.
Yes.
So we will actually be down there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're listening to this, probably on the Thursday, Friday, around there, when this is going to launch, the weekend, we're going to be down there. So come say hi to us.
You should absolutely stop by and say hi. Make sure you try and find one of the red wristbands with the hashtag IWMC on there.
Yep.
We're going to be giving discounts. There's going to be giveaways. I have local artist friends that are going to give discounts to people wearing those bands. So follow us on all the medias, the social medias. We got Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Yep.
And all the social medias,
yes.
As the kids say.
Our booth will be 1360.
That's right.
Down there at Denver Comic Con. We're going to have a huge booth. You shouldn't be able to miss us.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have huge banners that say our name. So as soon as you see it... stop on by.
Please. We also have
this awesome
somebody.
Guest.
Who's
Joe
there?
Benitez is going to be there with us.
Joe freaking Benitez is going to be with us at
Any
our booth.
Lady Mechanica fans, come say hi. He's got a Denver Comic Con exclusive. I think they're limited to 250 copies. I don't know what he's selling them for because he's selling them.
Right, it's not us. He's just doing his own thing at our booth.
It's his own thing. So anything he's selling is his own thing.
Yes.
But it's well worth
picking
up.
It's going to be awesome.
It is a really nice cover. I've already seen the pictures of it. So
it's going to be fantastic. And also, I guess, kind of in the news, we will be taking a break from the podcasting for 1 week.
What?
Yep. Next week.
We're not known for that.
We typically record on Wednesdays, Wednesday nights. But next Wednesday night, a lot of people are going to be down at the show unloading the...
You know, all this heavy stuff I got to carry.
Yeah.
Well, you're like here sleeping.
Yes, I'll be here sleeping.
I don't even know if I like you anymore.
That's fine. But so next week, we'll not record a show, so there will be a little bit of a hiatus.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to be anything crazy. The following week, we will definitely be recording so that we can get you out another episode. And then, as always, we do a stream sale and a book club. If you're listeners, you've heard the spiel before, but last Thursday of every month...
Every podcast is someone's first podcast.
That's true. At the end of every month, the last Thursday, we do a book club. This month, we are doing Mystery Men by David Liss and Patrick Zercher.
Amazing book.
From Marvel Comics. You can pick that up here in store or wherever you get your comics.
I already had somebody come in today and tell me they're give me their, like...
their little spiel.
Little spiel about what they thought about it.
Nice.
It was an interesting little spiel, and I think you might hear a lot of the same thing. So.
All right. And then our stream sale is something we do every Friday night on Facebook. It's we do a live stream sale from 6 p.m. Mountain Standard Time to 8 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. It's super simple, super fun. All you have to do is watch the live video, and in the comments below, you can put down if you want to buy something, and we do ship or do local pickup. So
that's right.
It's a lot of fun. Check
every,
us out.
Every Friday, 6:30 to 8. Mm-hmm.
Yep, exactly. So, yeah, there we go.
Sounds good. From there, I think we should go to picks of the week.
Excellent.
With this, I think I'm going to start with me.
Next, always start with you.
I think I should. No, that's not true at all.
You think you're so cool.
I do think I'm so cool. That's true. But, so my pick this week is from Image Comics. I have picked this a couple times, as Zach had mentioned, but I want to keep people looking for this comic.
You got to say the title like you're Leonardo DiCaprio in Titanic.
Like how? Like, Rose? Rose?
Like that. Rose!
Please move over, Rose. It's really, there's so much space.
Please.
So it is.
If you just get on one side and really, hug it, I can get on the board.
Maybe if I could just get my heart out of the water, it would help. But so it is Rose, the comic, number 3 by Meredith Finch.
I'm Iguara.
Excellent story. This is a story about magic and fantasy in the vein of more of a Viking-like style of magic, and I really enjoy it. In this issue in particular, they introduce the cat that kind of provides the magic. So in this
Kitty.
In this fantasy world, there's the giant big cats that provide mystical powers, and combined with a cat guardian, K-H-A-T cat, combined with a cat guardian, they can inherit, their powers combine, create Captain Planet. No, they just have a really,
this took a turn.
Or not.
Or not.
It's that or not that at all.
Yeah, they have enhanced powers together. But a cat has to pick a cat guardian and so forth. The evil cat guardian is trying to take over all of the cats, and she has 4 of the 5. The final cat guardian is currently looking for our hero in this series, and it's, I don't know how to describe it, and I hope I give it the right panache, if you will, because it's, this feels like a He-Man cartoon that I would watch.
It's a fantasy.
Yeah, it's Saturday morning, with just all the love and intent to do so.
Yeah,
I would cancel plans. I want to be in this book. I want to be in this world.
The
story is unique enough that it feels fresh, even though the ideas may not be so.
Sure.
I think that anybody interested in anything Harry Potter, any action,
Harry Potter,
you want to be a part of this book. Yeah. And Meredith's writing is really good.
Well, the art in that is awesome too.
The art's insanely good.
I really dig the art in that.
So, I again suggest Rose for those that haven't jumped on this train yet. You need to get on it.
I think I suggested the first one.
Yeah, we both did.
I can't remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then he did 2 and 3. So, yeah. And I definitely agree. If you're looking for fantasy, if you're a fantasy fan, fantasy novel fan, then you should pick up Rose. It's a pure fantasy book.
Like it. I think if
might give
I
a
think
shot.
It compares to the same people reading Birthright or Reborn or
7 to Eternity kind of genre, in a sense.
In a way, yeah.
Which are those are all kind of different fantasy stories.
Yeah, they're all.
Exactly.
But,
yeah.
You know.
If that's up your alley, then you'll dig it.
It's definitely the right genre for that. Yeah. So.
All right.
Excellent. Let's go with Zach next.
You want me to go?
Yes, because his kind of leads into our...
Well, so
spinning.
Oh, that's true. So I'm going to gush about this book because it's been a while since I've...
Gushed?
Felt about... No. I felt this way about this
week,
book.
Last week. The week before. And well, every sure. Other podcast before.
No, but 15 minutes before we got the
podcast. No, about this writer specifically.
Okay.
My pick from last week is...
Let it out, man.
It's so beautiful,
man.
My pick was...
Not you too, man.
Defenders number 1 by Brian Michael Bendis.
Yes.
And art by David Marquez.
Yes.
So...
I still haven't read this one.
I have read this 3 times since last week.
Oh.
And I don't usually do that. I read it once because I was like, oh, I got the first one, see if I want to continue to read it.
Were you stricken by surprise blindness when you read it? Is that why you read it 3 times?
No.
How did you have time to read it 3 times?
I just did. Well, another thing is that Marvel has brought back their digital codes. So now it is on my iPad, and I can read...
It's your pooping comic.
Sometimes.
Sometimes that can be true.
Or my laying in bed late at night comic. I'm always on my iPad, so when they do the... We talked about this on the podcast before.
Yes.
I love the Marvel digital, and I like that DC's starting to do it, because I've read The Forge a couple times because it's on my iPad as well. Anyway, the point about this is that this is Brian Michael Bendis going back to the things that he loves. The Defenders is the book with Daredevil, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, and Iron Fist.
Street-level
characters. And so this is vintage pure Bendis. This is going to be for if you loved his
Bendis when he pays attention and doesn't just phone it in.
This is if you loved his Daredevil, if you loved his Jessica Jones, if you loved some of his new Avengers stuff.
I like his current Jessica Jones.
Yeah, and this is the first time he's written Iron Fist. But he gets all these characters. This is street level. It feels very much like a crime comic on the streets, but with some crazy supervillains. Mm-hmm. But the humor's back that Bendis has been known for, the attention to detail, and the thing that I love about Geoff Johns, and the thing that Bendis, when he's firing, the thing they can do is that they can give you one sentence and you understand everything.
Right.
And there's a scene in this... In this comic book that I absolutely loved. It's not vital to the entire story, but Iron Fist walks in on Jessica Jones at a bar. She's drinking, and he goes, "Is he done yet?" And she goes, "No, but I think this is more for him than trying to find information." And he goes, "Oh," and then he orders something to drink, and Iron Fist and Jessica are sitting there while Daredevil beats the crap out of these people,
right,
just at a bar,
mm-hmm.
And then. She says something about control, and Iron Fist says, "Control is an illusion." And that's it. That's the entire thing. And I was like, this is fantastic, because that's all the different characters in one panel that they did.
Scene.
Yeah, exactly. Luke Cage is awesome.
Scene.
It can't be stated enough that David Marquez's art on this is really good. They bring in, a lot of the underworld, some people that you don't expect. And then Bendis also brings back something that he used to do back in the day with his Avengers, is the prose backups. And in this one, it's Luke Cage being interviewed by The Pulse, which was another comic that he did with Jessica Jones.
Right.
So again, like I said, it's kind of a throwback to the stuff that Bendis made his name on. And it's to the part of... why he's a good writer. So
it's like that really awesome sock you have. You just put it back on and it fits perfectly.
You
don't know why you tried other socks.
It's good.
You don't know why the writer tried other socks?
Yeah.
I'm so confused.
I don't like explaining my analogies to you.
No, if you enjoyed Jessica Jones, if you enjoyed Bendis's Daredevil,
yep,
if you enjoyed his new Avengers run and his Ultimate Spider-Man run, if that's the kind of Bendis that you've enjoyed, this is that Bendis.
Right.
So I highly recommend it. I cannot wait for issue 2, which comes out next week as of this recording, and I will put on my iPad and I will read it again and again.
That sounds awesome.
So I loved it. I think
I'm gonna read it for sure. So
yes, I'm gonna make you read it. Anyway, so
all right,
that's
Sean. What about you?
Someday I'll read it. So DC decided they wanted to start doing these little mashup one-shots.
They did.
Yes.
There's a few of them that can't, that have come out, and this particular book, Martian Manhunter and Marvin the Martian, I really, really dug.
So,
just from the cover alone. The cover alone is
I know that the cover kind of blew you away.
I like Aaron LaPresti.
Aaron LaPresti's really
good. And this particular cover is just freaking awesome, man. It makes me, like, geek out a little bit.
Right.
I just dig it.
So. I had to buy one because my girlfriend's brother is a huge Martian the Marvin the Martian fan, and so I picked that one up, and everyone that's picked it up has loved it. So, and it's just a wacky idea, the Looney Tunes superhero, like.
Well, the Looney Tunes, like, it's certainly because they're doing these one shots, like I said, and it's like a Looney Tunes character mixed in with a well-known DC character or something, you know, and it's some of the mashups seem a little weird, but some of them you're kind of like, okay, that's. That seems pretty
smart.
Well,
spot this one is seems pretty smart.
This is this is brilliant. Like
so, I
it
mean,
works 100%.
It does. Yes, it does.
Steve Orlando and Frank Barbary.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you pronounce his last name?
The
writers. Aaron LaPresti does both the cover and the interiors.
Great art.
But in kind of the way they've been breaking these up is the first half is usually more of what if the Looney Tunes character came
into
the DCU.
They kind of fall into a DC universe.
And then they have another smaller backup story where what if the DC character fell into Looney Tunes.
Right. And
so they're, one of them is usually a little bit, I wouldn't say it's necessarily serious, but one of them is a little more bent on the DC take, and one of them is more of a cartoony, like I'm watching a Looney Tunes cartoon.
One is, one is absolutely cartoony, is how I'd explain
it,
where both of them are humorous.
Every issue, every one shot they've done has been set up this way.
Yeah.
So they all have that same similar style to them.
Uh-huh.
It's just the content of the story and like what you get out of it when you're reading it. So anybody who's watched Looney Tunes cartoons back in the day,
and
you can probably get some serious enjoyment out of these anyway.
Yeah.
And I love Marvin the Martian.
Right.
I thought he was awesome. And I like Martian Manhunter quite a lot.
Sure.
So mixing these two together and having them do, you know, the old square dance together, that was pretty freaking awesome.
The thing I enjoy about it is, for me, Warner Brothers has owned DC forever.
Yes.
Like, almost my entire time of reading DC.
Well, I mean, they bought them in the 60s.
Yeah.
I was going to say it was a long time ago.
So,
when they were, like, having...
I remember, like, the superhero mashups from, like, the McDonald's toys and all that stuff.
When Batman 1989 came out, where you went to Warner Brothers stores to find Batman stuff.
So, it's not out of the ordinary for these characters to, you know, mash up every now and then. It's been a while, so it's interesting, and... that I'm happy they're back, and I wasn't always happy they were back, and that will bring us into Spinning the Rack. Spinning the Rack! Spinning the Rack!
Yeah, set it up. You're pretty good at setting it up here.
All right, so...
Because this tonight's topic all got spurned because of something.
It got spurned because of another comic that's in this same line of comics.
Right.
Yes.
There's a comic coming out next week. Little comic called Batman.
And Elmer Fudd.
And Elmer Fudd.
That's right.
Yes.
Now, you're not going to believe the next sentence I say, and that's okay.
You're not going to believe the next couple minutes as we talk about this, but just know that when this...
we got to read, all of us here at the store got to read a preview issue.
Yes.
Yes.
Before it's dropped on you, the public.
Right. Yes.
And probably when I post this, it'll probably be gone.
Out, yes. And it's already gone. But, so...
And it's gone!
So what had happened is DC... why don't you start? You heard this from Jim Lee.
Well, Keith and I were at the Comics Pro meeting, and they introduced what they were going to do in the future, and they introduced these books, and they said, okay.
Correct.
You know, they did all the different titles, Wonder Woman, Tasmanian Devil, was it Bugs Bunny and Legion of Superheroes, is that right?
Right.
Yeah,
it's Bugs Bunny and Legion.
The Marvin the Martian and Martian Manhunter and Batman and Elmer Fudd. I mean, they were like introducing these
Devil,
books.
Wonder Woman,
Lobo
Lobo
and the Roadrunner. So they're introducing these books, and we were sitting there. Keith and I were just like, okay. Whatever.
Cool.
And then you hear Jim Lee, because he happens to be sitting behind us, and he's snickering. And he's like laughing away, and he's just shaking his head, and he's smiling.
Oh, he wasn't even doing a presentation.
He was just sitting behind us. And he's like, you guys have no idea. You have no idea how good these are.
Right.
And he just kept saying that, and we're like, okay, Jim.
So, fast forward, and the DC distributor puts out email saying that it's the greatest comic. I just read the greatest comic that DC's put out and gave us the download for Batman Elmer Fudd. So Keith went, okay, I'm going to give it a shot simply because of that.
Yeah.
So he reads the preview. He immediately comes to me and says, you need to read this. And I had written these off almost immediately. Not because
they're bad.
Yeah,
you thought they were going to be goofy.
But yeah, it's just, it wasn't in my genre of things I like. I appreciate the Space Ghost connection, the Hanna-Barbera mashups, the
sure
Planet of the Apes, the Power Rangers. It's just not my thing. And Keith goes, no, you have to read this comic.
So yeah, stop. No, yeah, and don't. Right. You're reading this comic. Yep.
So I sit down and read it, and guys, it's the best Batman comic. It's the best comic I've read all year.
It's probably one of the best comics I've read in the last 2 years.
That includes the button. That includes Rebirth. Now,
I feel like I'm at, like, when I read it, I felt like I was at an MC battle, and somebody drops the mic and they go, oh, da 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 da, and you just, everybody in the crowd's all, oh, at the very end of it. That's how I felt.
Yeah.
So Sean reads it and he loses his mind.
Yep.
And then we all point to Zach.
Yep. And I came in yesterday to come into work, and everyone goes, so have you read Batman Elmer Fudd yet? And I went, no, because I'm and Richie and I, we've had this discussion many times. I'm a DC fanatic, so much so that I was going to buy these all anyway,
right,
just because it's, well, there's DC characters in them, so
correct,
I will buy them. But they're like, I'm like, no, you know, I was going to get it. And they go, no, you have to sit down and read this. I went, okay, I'll get to it. They go, like, now. I went, well, at my lunch, let me work a little bit, then I'll... So then at lunch, you know, I'm like, man, you guys are hyping me up about this. And they said, and then Richie says, I gotta tell you something, Zach. I went, okay. He goes, so I love Scott Snyder. You know that, right? I go, yeah, he's great. Yeah, I think Tom King may be the best Batman writer of all time. And I went, what?
Didn't you slap him?
I went.
It was real close. He had his hand up in the air.
I was like, what are you talking about? He goes, just read this. And I sat there and I read it, and I was like, you've got to be kidding me about how good this is. It's insane.
So that's all we're going to tell you about this book.
Buy it.
Is buy it.
If you can find it at this point.
Yeah. It's going to be sold out. We did not order enough.
If you can't find it, wait for the second printing, because it's already on that. Before it's even hit the masses, there's going to be a second printing. Pick that up.
Yes.
You have to read this comic.
Yep.
And that sparked today's topic.
Yeah, yes. The one-shot comics that maybe... It doesn't have to be a serious one-shot made comic,
right,
but it can be any comic that out of the blue blows you away.
It's a comic that you would look at.
It's a one single issue, and you're just like, oh yeah, cool. And you start reading, and you're like, holy, what did I just read?
Right.
Yeah.
It's a comic that you look at that's either normally in your regular pickup schedule, or yes, maybe it's not, and you're just like, oh, I guess I'll pick that up. And then you read it, and you're like, that was the best 24 pages of content I've ever devoured.
Yeah.
People need to know about this comic. Why aren't we all talking about this comic book?
I need to scream to the heavens.
Exactly.
So I need to get the word into your hands.
Can I get a name? So
can I get a witness?
That's exactly right. The beam of light shines down on you as you pour into these immaculate stories written simply for its existence. It has nothing to do with the continuity of something. These aren't pinnacle points in a storyline. It's legitimately an amazing story. One comic book that just entered the ethos and became a legend in its own.
Well, and I think the very first one we're going to talk about, is going to, you know, prove, you know, talk about your point.
Right.
The first one that we're going to talk about is Brave and the Bold, number 33.
Now, this correct is the, was it the 2010?
2010
Brave. 2010 Brave and the Bold. And this is going to be the cover that has Zatanna, Wonder Woman, and Batgirl on it.
And this would have been a retro look at Batgirl at the time.
Yes. And written by J. Michael Straczynski. Mm-hmm. Art on that one was, I think it's Chang, right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
And again, this is one that, you know, people just going, okay, and it's called, like, Girls' Night Out or something.
Ladies' Night Out.
Mm-hmm. And you read it, and you're going, okay, this is fun, you know, it's a fun
fun little read. This is kind of cool.
So we are going to do massive spoilers on these really great books. So what I'm going to have Zach do is he'll list them on the description. Yeah. So if you haven't read any of these and don't want them spoiled, go back, go find these on the on wherever you buy comics on the internet. You can try to find them here. A lot of these are probably picked up because they are so good.
Yeah.
But I mean, we got this one for $2 on DC's downloadable content. So
exactly.
Find them if you don't want these spoiled. Go read them.
Exactly.
And then listen to this.
So this is the big spoiler alert right here.
So that's it. That's all you're going to get.
So you find out that, you just recently read it.
So I did. So this is exactly what we're talking about. This bypassed me because it had nothing to do with Batman in my eyes. I saw, that'd be a really great...
the Brave and the Bold stuff, they were all basically either one or two shots. You know, it was just one little snippet in time in this DC story. Yeah. And it could be two different characters that maybe had nothing to do with each other. Correct. That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So
I was like,
what was the first and second one? It was Green Lantern and Supergirl.
Well, there's Green Lantern, Supergirl.
That was like the early ones, but they kind of continued along this train. So you get to this issue,
And then
33 issues in,
and they drop this really. It's just a story about Zatanna waking up and deciding she needs Wonder Woman to help her give Barbara Gordon the best night out she's ever had. So they have just a really great time.
Girls' night out, partying.
Just partying, getting drunk. It looks like
dancing.
Barbara accidentally catches the two embracing in the bathroom at one point. She's like, you don't see that every day. Holy cow. You know, and it spirals into a night where they end at like the wee hours of the morning. They go dancing, karaoke, and they end up at a diner and they're eating and they're kind of discussing the plight of the Oracles.
Their lives, basically.
Yeah, and how sometimes it's so hard being so powerful and so helpless at the same time, maybe all-knowing, but without the all-powerful, and kind of what it's like to be superheroines and knowing some of the future. And that blinks into her final night. Barbara Gordon spends the next night with her father, and it is a prelude to the Killing Joke. So Zatanna had a premonition of Barbara Gordon being paralyzed. and says, I can't do anything about it. I don't even know what's going to happen. So the only thing I can do is stop her from being Batgirl for one night and have a...
Great, not
at least one normal
night. An amazing night of dancing and laughing and being just having a good time.
Yeah.
Soul crushing. Just soul crushing this comic.
And by the end of the book, you see her. She's waking up after being shot by the Joker.
Right.
And she's
in her wheelchair.
She's in her wheelchair and she's going to work as Oracle.
And so, she's Oracle. Again, and she talks about her favorite memory just of dancing.
So again, with her pals. This was not solicited this way.
No.
We weren't told like, hey guys, you guys really need to pick up this Brave and the Bold.
Oh no. It was one of those ones where when it came out we just ordered what we would order.
Yep.
And it was like hit you right in the feels, man.
And now it is a I think it's a $20 book.
Yeah.
So if you find one for $20, that is its price.
Yeah.
Just that is how it's going to be. But it's.
I should mention that even though we are spoiling these are comics you can pick up and read, knowing everything, and it still hits you.
Yeah.
They're so well done.
Sure.
Yeah, we just made you read this. Today.
I just read this and I'm looking at it and it's still hitting me. I'm just like, oh god, it hurts so bad.
Is so good, and the way they anyway.
So that is an excellent example of the type of comics that we're discussing.
Another one that popped up that we all went, oh yeah, that one's fantastic.
Because at first we were like, what are these? Yeah. We kind of had to like start racking our brains.
Because it's hard to find.
I know they're out there, but it's just remembering what
we said, it's hard to find issues.
And by the way, if anybody has any that they want to bring up to us,
absolutely
leave it in the comments, because I will check them out for
sure. Me too.
Because I would like to read something that maybe touched you that came out of the blue.
Absolutely. So
and the funny thing is about some of these lists that we looked up. The ones that killed me were like, they listed all of Trillium. That's not the point we're trying to get across here. And it's not the whole story. We're looking for that one issue that out of the blue that caught you off guard.
Exactly.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, these stories are finished in, 24 to 30 pages. Sean has one that's 6 pages long.
I made both of you just read it today.
Yeah, we read it. It's 6 pages.
Because this one always stuck with me, and I was like, wow, that's kind of deep.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. So the one that popped up that I went, oh, yeah, this is like another classic, is Ultimate X-Men number 41.
And we've talked about this issue before.
Yeah, and the funny thing is you told me, I looked at it, I was like, I don't remember what happens in this issue. And then Richie said, it's this. And I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, so this was written by Bendis, art by Dave Finch. And it's a very simple story.
Just in the middle of the run of X-Men.
Yep. A kid wakes up, goes downstairs to look for his parents. They're not there. He goes, okay, that's weird. I'm going to go to school.
Doesn't run anyone into anyone on his way to school.
Yep.
He says it's awfully quiet.
It's really weird.
For a Monday morning or whatever.
Yep. And he gets to school and he starts, and some girl that's kind of interested in him talks to him. And she and everyone else around him burst into flames.
And, that day.
And everywhere he goes, people burst into flames. It then cuts to a cave where he's living in it. And Wolverine shows up in the cave and says, hey, how are you doing? And he goes, you know, I killed all these people. He goes, yeah, you did. And he's like, can you tell me how much? How many? He goes, oh, you don't want to know that. He goes, yeah. He's all 200 and something.
265.
And then you're sitting there and, you know, and he's crying and he's going through it. And Wolverine just goes, yeah, okay. And then the kid finally realizes that something bad's going to happen. And
well, the kid's like, am I going to be an X-Man?
Yeah, am I going to be an X-Man?
he goes, yeah, maybe. And then he realizes, you know, Wolverine, he gives him a beer. And he goes, yep, you should finish your beer. And the kid, you know, is talking about, oh, you know, he really...
Look to the end of that one.
Yeah, he really wants to, you know, he wanted to do different stuff, and he wanted to, you know, be better to his parents and all this kind of stuff.
Wish he had a girlfriend.
Yep, and he, you know, and then Wolverine says... You know, well, don't worry about this. No one's ever going to know, you know, what happened.
Right.
And he goes, well, why is that? He goes, because people can't know if it's a mutant because it's going to be bad. And so he goes...
Because it's important to know at this point in Ultimate X-Men, they were kind of worried about people. It's another racism thing, like with, you know, if people were to find out, you're representing us all here.
Sure.
You know, you kill 265 people and you're a mutant, you're almost abolishing everything we've already worked on.
Yep. And the kid, it dawns on him that...
Maybe I'm not going to make it out of here, okay?
Wolverine is there
to take care of the problem.
To put it, yeah, because he says, you know, I can't live with this power. And Wolverine says, I know. And the very end of it is Wolverine walking out of the cave.
Correct.
And that's it.
And that's it.
And you're like, whoa, man. So, fantastic one-shot.
And a brilliant explanation of the Wolverine character and how dark that character can actually go.
Yeah.
Just rough.
Yeah.
I stared at the back of those 3 pages probably for 8 minutes, just like, did that just happen?
What?
So... Again, another story out of the blue. You don't need to know the before or after what happens with that. It's just that story encapsulated.
Exactly.
Simply put.
So, yeah, if you're looking for one, definitely pick that up.
Ultimate X-Men number 41.
41.
Great stuff.
All right, Sean, what's one that you wanted to bring up that you just have us read?
So, I know that a lot of people have read Common Grounds. It was an Image book probably 10, 15 years ago. And when it came out, it was a very, like, I don't know, I think there was only 5 or 6 issues originally, and that was it. Didn't do very well. But the cool thing I liked about this book was it was all centered around this coffee shop called Common Grounds where heroes and villains could meet, but they couldn't fight there. It was, you know, like the John Wick movies where you go to the hotel and there's no killing each other there.
Right.
Yes. Same kind of thing. There's no fighting. It's a place where everybody meets and you can just be yourselves. You don't have to worry about putting up the facade of being a hero or a villain or anything.
Right,
sure. So this story is basically all these little one-shots in it anyway. And they're all interesting in their own right.
They are.
But the one that always caught me the most was this one called Time of Their Lives. And the whole entire story starts off with this guy kind of boasting about his exploits of being a hero when he was younger. And he's talking to the guy working behind the counter of Common Ground, you know. Yeah, you ever heard of me? I'm this guy, and I did this. And I used to be really great. The guy does not care.
Right,
he kind of wanders off. So the guy's like, all right, I probably ramble on too much anyway. So he goes outside, and he ends up running into this bum that he recognizes. Uh-huh. And the bum, he's like, oh, yeah, I totally remember you. Remember back in the day we fought a couple times? Remember I stopped you from robbing that bank, and I stopped you from doing this? And, you know, I was just starting out, and my powers weren't, like, super good, and I wasn't really good at the whole superhero thing. And they, get through talking, you find out that the guy that's living outside, his life went to crap because he accidentally killed a kid.
Right.
So he ends up getting convicted, and he serves jail time. When he gets out, his life's ruined. So he turns to alcohol and basically becomes
homeless. His wife homeless. Left him. He can't get any help.
Homeless, penniless, and he lives in his old costume.
Right. Yep.
So towards the end of the book, the guy's offering him some money, and he's like, no, I'll make my own way. I've always made my own way.
I don't want your charity. I've got this.
Yeah. And then the original guy starts to leave, and he's like, oh, man. He's like, I can't do it. I have to be a human being to you.
Right.
And he's like, well, what do you mean? He's like, well, my wife, she passed on a long time ago, and I have this big house. Why don't you come and stay with me? You know, we're not in this game anymore, so why don't you just come and stay with me?
He says, is it weird because I'm a villain? And I'm super, he goes, no, at this point, we're just two old guys.
We're just two old guys, yeah. So the guy that was originally in the coffee shop in the beginning, he's like, we're just two old guys. We just have a past. You can come hang out. We'll be okay.
Yep.
And then as they're walking away, you see one of the newspaper clippings inside the cardboard box.
Mm-hmm.
And the roles were actually reversed.
Yeah, the guy in the box was the hero. He was the hero that accidentally killed a supervillain that jumped on him and didn't know what he was doing. And then this villain who, you know, had lived his life, learned from his ways, just became old man and, like, talking about the good old days when villains were villains and heroes were heroes. And all of a sudden...
Yeah, because you start out thinking he's the hero, and he's not.
He was totally the villain. He was the villain of it.
But at the very end of the book, he's giving solace to a hero.
We may not show to perfect strangers, let alone your worst enemy.
But yeah, it was such a... Like, when I first read this, and I read this when it came out, I don't know how many years ago. I seriously can't remember when this came out.
Right.
It was like 2000-ish.
Ish.
But when it came out, I was just like, holy crap, this is good. And every issue was, holy crap, this is good. And then this one particular issue was like, holy, whoa.
2007?
There you go.
Yeah.
So, and this, I like this book enough that when I saw,
Dan Jurgens.
Yeah, Jurgens at Denver Comic Con, he happened to actually have that first page. I bought it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I owned the very first page. So. I owned this one.
Yeah.
If you look at it in here.
Yeah, since you guys can't see it, just
that's great.
This opening page where it actually has a full shot of Common Ground.
Yeah, it's great.
I loved it. I was like, "You're seriously going to sell this for $75, dude?" Yeah, okay, I'm taking it.
Yeah,
that's pretty awesome.
That's awesome.
So, but excellent yeah, this book is awesome.
And that story, honestly, is 6 pages. It's not.
It's not very long.
It's just 6 pages, but it's brilliant.
Just, perfectly told.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent.
We'll go down some of the other ones here. One of the most famous ones is going to be G.I. Joe number 21.
You say famous, but I haven't read it. Explain to me.
The silent issue?
It's the silent issue.
I've read it.
Yep. Right. So this is going to be... when this happened, this was written and drawn by Larry Hama. This was number 21 of the ongoing G.I. Joe Real American 80s, Hero.
From the
80s. Uh-huh. And this whole issue is about Snake Eyes going and doing a mission. Well, Snake Eyes
not known for his talking.
He doesn't talk.
Right.
So the entire issue, there's no words in it at all. It's just art.
Oh, wow.
And at the time...
So the story is told completely...
Yeah. It's just completely through the art. It's just like a regular comic book. No words, no sounds, nothing.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And, you know, Marvel did that many years later in, like, the early 2000s, late 90s with Enough Said Month and all that sort of thing.
Right.
But when this happened, it was, groundbreaking.
Absolutely unique, right?
Yeah, and that's why that issue is one of the most sought after of that run. And that's why it's actually worth some money, is because of how unique it is.
So I ask you that I've read it. It really does display the story to you.
It's fantastic. Yes, absolutely. Oh, yeah. It's Snake Eyes kicking butt, doing a G.I. Joe adventure, but in silence. But it's not... I don't know how to describe it. It's not like you're just breezing through it going, I don't care. No, the art is so good that, you know, you're watching what's going on.
Does it engage you so you actually care about what's going to happen by the
end
of it?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah. And it became so popular that, comic companies many years later, all different kinds of comic companies have done those since then.
For a while, Marvel was doing an annual silent issue.
Hmm.
DC was doing an annual silent issue. They would do that where
that
they would do one issue.
Changed the game.
Yeah, for a while it did.
So, I mean, it's in that same vein. I chose a Hawkeye number 11 from Faction and AHA.
Yep.
They did a... this issue was called, famously, Pizza Dog.
Yeah.
And it's a story that is told from the perspective of a dog. And what's great about it is that it's actually trying to communicate through a dog's thoughts. So there's no real words. There are words, but only words that the dog can kind of pick up. And then everything else is kind of done with, like... weird symbols and directions, and it's trying to show you smells and tracking and things like that, like a dog would. Yeah, and it's actually a mystery series that pours into the reveal of a major death scene in the series. You don't need to know who that is or anything like that. It's excellent story written uniquely, to the point where it really took me back a minute. I was completely engaged, no words at all, and knew exactly what the dog was trying to say and where he was going with those directions. So that's another one that I threw in as well.
Very nice.
Well, if you're talking about ones that do something different with how they tell the story,
mm-hmm.
Batman number 5, mm-hmm. I think it was 5, it was from New 52.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the funny
Scott
thing about
Snyder,
this book...
Greg Capullo. Yes.
Funny thing about this book is
another
when
one
we first got it, we read it, and the way the book plays out, you're turning the book.
Correct.
Because you're basically going into madness with Batman.
Yes.
You're traveling through the Court of the Owl stuff into what his mental state would be, which is the book flips upside down, the book starts... You're actually doing different things with this comic
Batman's
to get through
the
book.
Batman's entered the Trial of the Talons, which means he has to go through this labyrinth. And through the labyrinth, you have to survive the madness that is the labyrinth. And
the brilliant thing about this book, how many people brought this book back and said, hey, they misprinted this book?
So many
people. We had to explain to them that it was the intent of the actual story.
Well, that original, that Wednesday when it came out, we were sitting there, we were looking at it, and we're like, oh, these are all misprinted. And then Sean...
No, I read it.
And
I was like,
read it.
No, dude, this is amazing. this is supposed to be
then
this
DC way. Then DC sent out a thing, and Scott Snyder sent out like an email.
I think he actually sent out a video email that said, hey guys, just so you know, this is supposed to, because people weren't understanding.
Right.
Everybody thought it was misprinted.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
But again, talk about a comic book. Challenging
you
to engage.
How can you actually make a story like this in any other medium besides a comic?
Absolutely.
You can't.
That's why, like, something like, not to bring up Watchmen, but like Watchmen and Trillium for two other examples, they're told in a way that it's impossible to replicate those in any other medium and mm-hmm. have it have the same impact.
Right.
You can't do it. So this particular single issue, when it came out, I was like, holy crap, this is good. And that's what cemented me as a fan of Scott Snyder,
right.
So, in the superhero world.
Yeah, I agree that it was almost like you dove into the comic book itself. It was taking you mm-hmm. on a crazy direction. And I remember reading it at home, and I was like... oh my god, what am I doing? And then you end, and your book is upside down, so you look like a weirdo.
Yep,
it's fantastic.
It is pretty cool, yeah.
So it's just...
And again, that just came out of nowhere.
Yeah, fifth issue. Think about how weird that is. Like, Snyder really hadn't even, like, placed his... solidified, like, I can do this, and you guys are gonna follow that. No, he just snuck it in there.
Yep.
Crazy idea. Wow. Really paid off.
Another book that I can think of that broke ground... at the time, was Miracle Man 15.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
explain this one, because I don't know.
So Miracle Man. So.
This could be
a whole entire podcast. So just to sum up, his sidekick, was it Young Miracle Man?
Yeah.
it's been a while since I've read it, so if I screw up any of the facts, I apologize in advance.
Yes, most of this is from the top of my head.
But he's so basically they're along the same lines as Shazam or Captain Marvel, where they're people and they say the magic word and they become the superhero. That's kind of how it works.
Yes. Yep.
So Young Miracle Man is extremely bullied,
right?
And his counterpart really doesn't put up with anything, and he's not actually a very good person. He doesn't understand why you actually have to be a hero, because he's not mature enough to understand why you be a hero.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So he's getting bullied, and they're raping this poor kid.
Okay.
And he's like, stop, don't, you're gonna make me, I don't want to do this, I don't. And then just because if he's under such duress, he says the magic word. And he becomes Miracle Man.
Okay.
It's Kid Miracle Man. Yeah, because Young Miracle Man is different.
Yep.
But he becomes Kid Miracle Man, and he destroys all of them. He kills all of them.
Wow.
And he goes on a rampage throughout London. But, like, you see, there's a scene in there where you see one of the guys' heads get ripped off and chucked in the trash.
Oh.
And then as he's leaving, the nurse was, like, one of the most jacked up parts, because he's leaving, and he's like, well, I always liked you. You're always nice to me. And then he leaves, and he turns around, and he's like, well, what would people really think? So he kills her anyway.
Holy God. So he goes
on this, like, massive rampage of killing. He really just loses it.
There's a scene. There's a two-page spread in this book. Rated R, by the way, everybody.
Yeah, this book is not for kids.
there's a two-page spread where you see London.
And it's
the
burning.
Yeah. And the thing that always catches me is that he grabbed, like, 5 or 6 people and skinned them alive and put them on clothes sheets.
Holy like cow. he was not okay.
Right.
He'd hit his last straw.
Written by Alan Moore, by the way.
He hit his last straw, and he just went
of course
way off the deep end.
Right.
So Miracle Man has to come in, and he comes in, and they fight a little bit, and they kind of get to a point where he ends up getting him to turn back into the regular kid. And he knows that at this point he has to snap his neck and kill him. So he does.
Right. So it's almost like a Wolverine thing,
because
he can't turn back.
And at the time, that was shocking as hell.
I can't imagine,
right? And the funny thing is, it's a small indie book.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because Marvel bought the rights, and they've tried to reproduce it kind of terribly.
Right.
But the original run, the original Eclipse stuff, you get to that issue, and you're just like, what the? Because you could tell he was deconstructing the superhero and what the superhero meant. At that time, and this was like the mid-80s to the early 90s is when this book came out, because it came out sort of erratically. But that particular issue caught everybody off guard. And it was low-pressed, and not a lot of people got to read it.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those...
one of the run.
Yeah, it's just one of those issues where out of the blue, it was just like, oh my God.
And you don't need the before or after. You can just read that issue and just be blown away.
You can read that issue and be shocked, pretty much.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. I have also looked at the Miracle Man stuff, and it can be pretty crazy.
All right, so let's move in. Now we're running out of time because these are passionate stories, but let's try to get through our.
We'll just go through really quickly. I'll do my last couple, and you guys can do yours. One of the big ones for me is Action Comics number 775.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be the one that introduces Manchester Black, who is currently appearing in Superman, written by Peter Tomasi. They based Superman versus the Elite off this comic book. And basically, a group of British superheroes show up. They're doing the we're going to kill people and hurt people and make sure the villains stay down. And Superman's fighting the public opinion about that, you know, by going, that's not how I do things. And people go, well, your old way's old, you know. And they make Superman angry enough that Superman cuts out one of their powers with his laser beam eyes.
Right.
Because he's like, oh, I see something's growing on your brain. I cut it out. You know, you should be good now. And he's like, I don't have my superpowers anymore. And Superman goes, yep, that's the way it goes. Final Crisis Requiem, I've talked about it before on the show.
Yep.
Written by Peter Tomasi. A brilliant love letter to Martian Manhunter when he died back in Final Crisis.
Tomasi did that one too?
Yep, Peter Tomasi did that one. Okay. And beautiful, heart-wrenching. It was one of the first comics that actually made me tear up.
Really
so,
good one.
Yeah, so those are mine.
A few of mine are... Gotham Knights number 32, which I had to explain to Zach, is a really great story. I've also mentioned it on the show. It's a one thing in Gotham Knights that they just kind of explain a whole day of Batman. It's 24 hours as Batman, and each page is pretty much an hour of his day. And you run from Bruce Wayne all the way to Batman, all the way back to sleep. And it's really interesting. It's very provocative and kind of just takes you on a day in the life. Not a ton of stuff that's like jaw-breaking or, you know, that'll mess your brain up. It's just really interesting engaging because of... you know, the simplicity in that. Batman and Robin number 23, also known as Batman and Nightwing. It takes place after Damian dies in Batman Inc. And
Peter Tomasi
writes it, and it is a story of Batman kind of losing it because he's lost his 10-year-old son. He creates a simulator that places him in the battle with Damian to see if there's any way that he can prevent or could have prevented his death. Mm-hmm. So after many, many weeks in this simulator, Alfred calls Nightwing and says, he needs help. We need him. You need to help him. So Nightwing comes in and says, Batman, you have to get out of this. And as a favor, jumps into the simulator with him to show that maybe perhaps if both of them were there, they would have been able to stop it. And then they actually do succeed. And, they come out of it, and Bruce is still hurt, and Nightwing tries to tell him, just because you save him in a simulator doesn't mean you save him in real life.
Yep.
And he then decides to become... Nightwing pleads with him to become a better Batman, use this death to continue his career on helping others, but as a better Batman.
Sure.
And he says that he can attempt that. So they leave, and then Alfred, as they leave, as they left, he puts on the simulator. And because Alfred was the one that let him go out into the world to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And so it plays out like he would have, as Damian says, like, I'm going to get out of here anyway. You can't stop me. He walks away, and then it realizes that Alfred actually tranked him. And then he just kind of passes out, and Alfred leads him to the bed, tucks him in.
Kisses, I totally remember this issue.
Kisses him on the forehead and says, I'll never forgive myself for letting you go. And then... he takes off the helmet and he starts bawling, and Bruce realizes that he's been mourning his loss but hasn't been mourning Alfred's loss, that they both lost on that day, and he has to shut down the system.
You're making me teary right now. Come on.
So busted. So, very excellent good. Story. Number 23, Batman and Robin. Again, Tomasi, just ripping your heart
out. Fantastic. And then the last one we had here was one that Sean brought up, Animal Man number 25.
That book is awesome.
Explain that one.
So this is early Morrison, Grant Morrison, before he... like, this was probably early Vertigo days for him. Like, the first couple pieces of work he had for Vertigo. He had Doom Patrol, he had Animal Man, he had, I think, the Arkham...
Arkham Asylum.
Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
It was, like, his first million seller, so, you know. But this particular book, so, the book starts out... the entire run starts out with... I can't remember his name.
Animal Man?
Yeah, Animal Man's real name. It's Buddy...
Garth?
No, it's Buddy Baker.
Yeah, Baker. I was couldn't remember his last name. So he's like, he feels like somebody's watching him, and he always feels like somebody's watching him through the whole run.
Okay.
Right? As you're reading it. Well, you get to issue 25, and Morrison writes himself into the book. And he's done all this horrible stuff to Buddy Baker. Like, his family's been killed, like, just all this stuff.
Right.
And you get to issue 25, and he's a broken man, and he's like, hey... I gotta apologize to you because I used you. You're just a trope in my story, so I could sell comics. I needed to sell books.
This is classic Morrison.
Yes, it is.
But this one particular issue, he shows up, explains all this, what he did, and he's like, oh yeah, you want your family back? You can have your family back, that's fine. And at the end of the issue, he opens the door and there's his family all alive again. So he Morrison undid his entire story
just
in
to
issue 25.
Show that he's playing God. In
yeah,
this
he was
universe.
Like he basically told him, "I'm God, and I'm just been playing right. with you as a story to entertain readers."
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. It's Grant Morrison. Yeah.
So that when, is I, Morrison. When I read that for the first time, I was like, "What in the hell?"
No.
Like,
no.
It's one of those things where your brain just goes, "Okay, well that happened."
So hopefully, with that, you will see.
We'd love to hear some of your
right. comments. Absolutely.
I would, personally.
Yeah, those
even
are,
if these two guys don't want
no,
to.
No, we absolutely do.
We do.
Zach and I love falling into comics, and these are the best examples of that. Remember, the only thing that we're saying is they can't be part of the run. Like, they're part of the run, but they're not pinnacle points in the run. Like, the death of Damien was obviously a really great story that Morrison wrote, but it was a reaction story that Tomasi threw in out of several different ones. There were lots of other reactions, but that story in particular was so good.
Yeah.
There was an honorable mention with Annual Superman.
Superman and, Annual number 11. Yeah, the what? Yeah,
what do you get for the man who has everything?
Right.
Mostly because you read
that. It's one shot stories.
You get to the end and you watch. You see, Superman's emotions get jacked with because Mongol shows up and puts that weird flower thing on his chest.
Yes.
I can't remember the name of the alien that he puts on his chest, but it makes you relive your ultimate desire. And his ultimate desire is that his parents are alive and he's fine
and he's happy in Krypton. Yeah.
And he in his mind, he's trying to fight and get out of it because he realizes it's not real. It can't be. It's too good. Right. It can't be real.
Correct.
And the whole time, Batman and Robin and Wonder Woman are trying to fight Mongol.
Yeah.
Like, the whole story, this one shot, it was just awesome.
Right.
And he's beating the hell out of him.
Fantastic.
Right.
They can't fight Mongol.
And I think it was actually Robin who ends up getting the gloves on to take that thing off of Superman, because you have to have these special gloves that actually even wield the thing.
Right.
And I think Robin was the one who did it, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think so.
And he pulls it off his chest, and Superman wakes up from his fairy tale and is just livid.
Yeah.
And the best part in the book is Mongol starts talking crap to him, and he's just like, burn, and he just starts cooking him with his eyes, beats the holy hell out of him. It is so good.
It's very good.
So there you go. Hopefully that inspires you, if you haven't read those comics, to go get them. Again, even if they're spoiled, these comics hit you.
You should read
them.
They're
excellent stories. And if you have all of those comics that we just said, well done.
Well
done. Good job. It's a good collection. So.
Yes.
Outside of that, we are going to take a break.
Yep.
Next podcast.
We're going to skip a week because it's Denver Comic Con.
So we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Yep. So
we'll
Denver Comic Con is coming up. Come visit us.
Yep.
And until next time, see you then.
Bye.